This is an RNIB Connect Radio podcast. Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello, and a very warm welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, our regular opportunity to catch up with the world of technology from a blindness or low vision perspective. Good to have your company. Don't forget, of course, Tech Talk, it's your show, and we'd love you to get in contact with us. It's the usual email address, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Coming up this week, we'll be thinking about money matters as we look at how easy it is, or otherwise, to set up mobile payment solutions from both Apple and Google. We'll consider the humble debit card and how accessible is that these days. And we'll be learning all about a new Braille Brain training product from the American Printing House. That's all coming up this time on Tech Talk. Joining me, as ever, is our regular co-host, Callum Stoneman, sir. How are you?
Hello. Yeah, doing pretty good, thanks. How are you?
Yes, yeah, just about there. You know, it's that sort of slightly end of term, you know, feeling as we all start to clear down, you know, for the holidays and, you know, just thinking, oh, am I going to get this done or can it wait till January?
I'm loving the number of meetings that are getting pushed back now to January for my work.
Yes,
I love this. Oh, we can't do this 2-hour long meeting now. Oh, we may as well rearrange it to January. Yeah, fine with me.
Now, got to ask you, not technology related, office Christmas party, have you been to one?
I've got mine in a couple of days, actually. So that should be a good laugh.
And then have you blocked out some time in your diary for recovery?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, the world has moved on now, right? You know, back in the day, people used to like sit on photocopiers and things like that. And of course, now everyone's got smartphones and, you know, you've got to behave yourself, Callum.
I know. I'll let you know if I end up going viral.
Well, there we are. Anything on your technology radar this week?
It's a bit of a difficult one this week because I'm still just flooded with, as I mentioned last week, being the tech support person. But I'm looking forward to a lot of these pieces. I feel like there's a lot to do with contactless, well, not necessarily contactless, but accessible payments that we've not really touched on much on this show. So it's good to get some of that. And this Braille
Brain. See what you did there? Touched on. Yeah, no, very good. Yeah. Because, of course, you know, over the holidays, you might be going out for a meal or maybe to a Panto or something like that. And there are times when, you know, you just need to pay for stuff, right? And it might be a taxi and you might find yourself in a situation where you're confronted with a touchscreen chip and PIN machine that you can't use as a blind person. So it'll be good to hear about the different options that are available in that scenario.
Yeah, definitely. And this Braille Brain as well. I'm looking forward to hearing more about this. I'm still not entirely across this, I must admit. I'm slacking a bit. I haven't done much research into it, which is, you know, thankfully we've got Hubert. But I just think, you know, any resources to help learn Braille, you know, is only a good thing.
Well, indeed. And a lot of people, you know, as we head into the new year, will be thinking about perhaps starting to learn Braille or perhaps brushing off their Braille skills. We've got World Braille Day, of course, coming up on the 4th of January. So, yeah, perfect timing, I think, for that one. Well, stick around, Callum. It's another Tech Talk. Long-term listeners will know, of course, about the value of controlling technology with your voice. And one company that has been at the forefront is, of course, Real Thing, who have brought us In Your Pocket and Phone, two speech-activated devices that provide access to a world of content for blind and partially sighted people. Well, we have exciting news from Real Thing, and here to share more is Louise Humphreys, who is the UK country manager and head of group marketing. Welcome back to RNIB Connect Radio, Louise. Good to have you with us. You've got an opportunity for us.
Yeah, hi Dave, thanks for having me on. Yeah, we're really excited that we are joining forces with RNIB and Thomas Pocklington Trust to create an internship for 9 months. So an opportunity for a blind or partially sighted person to come on board as part of our team and really support us across all aspects of our UK business. So they'll have an opportunity to learn about marketing, product development, to meet with our partners and help develop further relationships across the blind community alongside myself. It's really an opportunity for a person to come in and perhaps if they're in their first job, to just pick up a whole range of skills and hopefully at the end of the 9 months feel very confident to step out into the workplace, having developed not just business skills, but all of the social and communication skills that come from perhaps having that first opportunity in the workplace.
So you mentioned there you're looking for a blind or a partially sighted person, but what sorts of characteristics are you seeking? Does this need to be a younger person?
No. So the internships actually are open for people who are perhaps coming back into the workplace or are new to the workplace. So, of course, that can mean a student or a graduate or somebody who has recently finished education. But it could mean someone who perhaps has had a change of direction in their career, or perhaps they've taken time out for a reason, maybe having a family, something like that. So it's an opportunity to retrain. And while they'll get training from us on the job, they're also supported by Thomas Pocklington Trust as well throughout those 9 months. They're given a mentor from TPT who will support them with training as well as the training that we can offer as part of a role. So I see it a bit like an apprenticeship. So it isn't an apprenticeship, it's an internship, but in a similar way to building up those skills. And you may choose to change direction, and this is one way to do it.
And it's a great opportunity, especially when 3/4 of working age blind and partially sighted people are unemployed. And it's fantastic to hear that, you know, real thing, that obviously you make products for this market, but also you want blind and partially sighted people to be representing you, because this is a marketing kind of role where this individual will join you in demonstrating products to customers, right?
Yeah, that is a really crucial point here. So currently, our UK team and our Australian team, and we're not proud to say this, but actually everyone is fully sighted in both of those offices. And we do have two members of staff in the US who have sight loss, but we do not have anyone currently in the UK or in Australia. And so that really does mean that we haven't got the voice of our customer sitting at the table on a day-to-day basis, helping to guide us in our product development and our communications. We do actively seek those that input. We have a beta testing community who we actually meet with every week to get product feedback coming in. But we don't have anyone actually on our staff in the UK. So in creating this opportunity, I really do see that as critically important, that we bring someone into the team who can help guide us as much as anything. And we do see this person as someone who can act as a conduit between the organisation and the broader community. So that is feeding information, I suppose, both ways. And I would very much hope that this person can help with user experience testing, product development testing, that kind of thing, to ensure that we're really building our products and solutions out in the best, most meaningful way.
And we'll come to the specifics of how to get in touch in a second. But now's quite an exciting time to be joining Real Thing, because you've got some emerging features on your products. Do you want to just tell us about some of those?
Yeah, so like I suppose many organisations right now, we've been exploring how we can take advantage of ChatGPT and other large language models to ensure that our products are as smart as they possibly can be. And we have recently plugged ChatGPT into the background on RealSam devices, which enables people to start talking to the device and asking more things of it. So essentially, you can ask RealSam for different solutions. So one example of something you might be able to do is say, ask RealSam to give me some suggestions for dinner tonight, perhaps you've got some chicken in the fridge and you want to find out what possible ideas for dinner you have with just chicken in the fridge. We've also made some enhancements to our OCR tool. So up to now, our OCR, our optical character recognition tool, has you can open it using your voice, but it has required you to capture the image by touching the screen and asking it to read back what it sees. That's going to be fully voice controlled from January. So I've seen the final showcase of that from our engineering team. So that's really quite exciting that that's a fully voice controlled solution coming out. That same OCR currently has object recognition in there, but it will also have scene recognition in there. So you'd be able to hold it up to the fridge, for example, or hold it up to a menu and ask questions of what the image captures as well. So all of those things are really quite interesting and exciting for us. And the very early days, obviously, we are building out the solutions, but we are trying to ensure that the RealSam devices are adding value and taking advantage of these new features that are out there in the market.
And how much input will your intern have? Obviously, we've talked about they're going to be demonstrating the product for customers, but presumably you're going to want a bit more than that. You want somebody who can feedback and feed into that development process.
Yeah, like in an ideal world, the person that comes on board may choose to use RealSam Pocket as their day-to-day device. Feedback in real time as to how they see potential for improvement. But aside from that, they would be invited to attend our weekly meeting with our Australian engineering team. So we have that every Tuesday morning. And that's an opportunity to provide feedback both ways. The engineering team will check in with us on developments that they're working on, and vice versa, we'll give them feedback and suggestions based on what our customers are saying and asking for. And we also are in the process of setting up a customer advisory steering group. So we're actively recruiting for that right now. So again, if any of your listeners are actually interested in joining that, then that is something that the intern who joins us will be part of. And depending on their appetite, they may even be interested in supporting the leadership of that group. So I suppose really what I'm trying to say with all of this is that we are very focused on building out our customer feedback. But not just by sending out surveys, can you review this product for us, please? We want to take it a step further than that and really speak to users who are experiencing the product every day and use that meaningful, qualitative feedback to make improvements.
And the intern, do they need to be based in the UK, presumably? And is this a sort of a hybrid role, or can you be home-based, or how does that work?
We're really open to that. So I'm actually home-based. I live in London, but our team are in Peterborough. So we have an office in Peterborough. It's a brand new office. We've actually only moved in the last month in the heart of the city centre. So if the individual was living in the Peterborough area, then they would be invited to work from there, either full-time or on a part-time hybrid basis. But equally, we're open to them being based anywhere within the UK. So yeah, that's the only stipulation, really, that they are based in the UK so that they can join us for team meetings and obviously for meeting the partners and customers that we have here as well.
Yeah, and there are good rail links as well to Peterborough. You can travel down the East Coast Main Line and get across from Birmingham and up from London, of course. So, you know, pretty well connected there. Well, fantastic. So what's the sort of the timetable for this, Louise?
Yeah, so applications are open now. We've had a couple of applications, but we're open to seeing who else is out there as well. The closing date for applications is the end of December. So people have got a couple of weeks to still get their application in. If they jump onto the RealSam website, we've now got a careers tab at the top. So the information there for the role is all through the careers tab. And people are invited to send a CV with a covering letter, just to keep it simple, really. Interviews will be taking place in January with a view to the person starting in February. So TPT is bringing on a number of internships across different organisations in the UK. So there's a number of charities and other organisations that work within the sight loss sector that have put roles up. So another option is that You can look on the TPT website and you can find all of the roles on there. But then hopefully choose the one that's worth the real thing.
Excellent. Okay. So what's the best way for interested parties to get in touch, Louise, about the internship and also about your advisory group as well?
Yeah. So the easiest way for people to get in touch is probably to email. So our simplest web email address, is helpline@realsam.co.uk. So helpline@realsam.co.uk. And if anybody wanted to get in touch via that email address, then we can redirect them to the best person in the team to help.
So Louise, at the risk of putting you on the spot, this internship, you mentioned 9 months, obviously, and that's a great way for anyone to kind of get to know you and for you to get to know them. What happens at the end of 9 months? Is that it? Or are there any opportunities to perhaps have a conversation about a more permanent role with Real Thing?
Yeah, I think at the moment, obviously, we don't completely know. But what I can say is over in the US, we employed a member of our team around a year ago now through a similar program. So they came in as an intern that was supported by a charity over there. And actually, that person is now permanently employed by us. And we're in conversation with that same organisation to bring a third person into the US team who is blind or partially sighted. We also have our copywriter over in the US who is from a blind and partially sighted family as well. So her and her sister have both worked for us at various points in time. So I would definitely say there is a likelihood that the person would be given the opportunity to stay on as well. So, yeah.
Excellent. Well, that's really good to hear. Greater representation from the community. And of course, employment, it's a perennial challenge. So great to hear about blind and partially sighted people getting jobs. Louise Humphreys, UK Country Manager and Head of Group Marketing with Real Thing. Thank you so much for joining us on RNIB Connect Radio.
You are listening to RNIB Connect Radio. And when it comes to learning Braille, a brand new way of learning Braille has been made possible with Braille Brain. It's an online Braille learning course, but what is it exactly? Well, joining me today to talk about it from American Printing House are Sarah Welsh and Willow Freeman, Tactile Technology Product Specialists and Product Managers, respectively. Welcome to you both.
Hello.
Hello. Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you very much. So let's start with the main question about Braille Brain. What is it?
Well, Braille Brain is a course to teach Braille to people that can already read print. And it's a great way to set up your course. And it's a very, it's very necessary that people know that that's why it was set up. There are courses that teach both Braille and literacy at the same time. And there's a ton of rules about how one would teach Braille and literacy at the same time. And the rules are a little relaxed if you assume the user already knows how to read print. And it allows you to just focus on introducing the contractions, not in the order that you would teach those words to the person, but just kind of in the order that they need to know those contractions. So it definitely changes how Braille gets introduced to the individual.
And to chime off of that, I do want to point out that Braille Brain is completely free and it is website-based, no account needed. So as long as you connect to the internet, you can get to Braille Brain.
It was developed using a grant. Great folks at California State University, they developed it initially, and it's actually based on existing courses that are used to teach Braille to TVIs, teachers of the visually impaired, that are currently at university. One of the things that I really like about it is there are a lot of courses out there that teach UEB. I like the way that Braille Brain is structured because it teaches you what you need to know. So you have the lesson, and so you're learning to read the Braille, you're learning why you would use something, you're learning what Braille goes with what print word. And then when you get to the lesson part, there's a lot of different kinds of questions that you're asked. And you don't get immediate feedback. I really like that it's set up that way. I like that you give your answer, and then you have to be sure, you have to think about it, then you have to submit your answer, and then you're told whether or not you were right or wrong. I like that it was done that way. My background is as a Braille transcriber, and I did that for several years. And part of how I learned to be a Braille transcriber, learning to read Braille, especially visually, I'm sighted, and I read Braille visually, is actually pretty easy. The thing that is difficult and that will make you a good Braille transcriber is being able to proofread Braille. Just knowing the contractions is easy. Being able to spot when a contraction hasn't been used that should have been used, or you use the wrong contraction or a dot is missing, whatever it is, that's the really challenging part. That's the part that requires some attention to detail. And I feel like the way that BrailleBrain is structured, you learn how to read, how to write, and you learn how to proofread and pay attention to kind of the minutiae of Braille. And I like that it's set up to teach the different codes as well. So you can learn uncontracted, you can learn contracted UEB, and then you can start to get deeper into the math code part of it on UEB. Or if it's applicable to you, you can learn Nimeth as well. So the Nimeth math code.
Who is it directed at? What people and groups of people specifically?
So BrailleBrain is really aimed towards people, like Willow was saying earlier, who already have a literary foundation. So to put it simply, people who can already read. Like Willow was saying earlier, for someone who is with learning Braille and doesn't have a literary foundation, the way you would learn it is very different and structured differently with different rules. So our use case is we're aimed for perhaps people who've lost sight later in life, or for our students who are in TVI programs that are either just starting or already in the field to help reinforce those Braille skills, as well as paraprofessionals. So to put it shortly, it is aimed for people who already have reading skills to then transfer that to Braille skills.
Yes, it was originally designed for TVIs. And so that was the original use case. And when the folks from Cal State came to APH, where we work, about migrating their material to our platform. That was when we started talking about, well, this would be great for parents. There's so many parents that can't support their kids because their kids are learning Braille, but the parent isn't learning Braille. And so then the kid asks for help with their homework and the parent can't even tell what the student is doing. So you've got parents that can learn now, you've got TVIs, you've got people that lose their sight later in life. And this happens way too much. It's way more often than I think anybody would want to admit, but you have students that go through a low vision program and everybody's pretty sure they're going to go blind eventually, or they're going to lose their sight to the point that they need Braille, but they are never taught Braille. And that shouldn't happen. We should be teaching these students Braille early. Like, if there's any chance they're going to need Braille in their life, they should be learning Braille before they graduate. But it doesn't always happen. And so that this is another tool for those folks so that they can remain literate even after, you know, they can no longer read print. Its focus is UEB. So it's got UEB, both the literary side and the math side. If you take kind of, it's called like the basic UEB course, that will teach you the literary part of UEB, and it'll teach you a little bit of math. And then we have an advanced course that's in development now and will be ready next year, early next year. That'll teach more of the advanced math side of UEB. And then you've got the Nimeth course. So the Nimeth course is very specific to places that use Nimeth, which I think is mainly just the United States and a little bit of Canada, maybe. But the UEB side, that can benefit anyone that uses the UEB code. So it could benefit folks in the UK, it can benefit folks in South Africa, Australia, New Zealand, and on and on.
And is the material in the course, is this for touch learners, or is it for sighted people learning Braille?
The sighted part's easy. You know, we've got the Braille visually on the screen. And then there's a complex problem that comes from there. So Braille, ironically, on the web is very inaccessible because screen readers do not have great support for Braille. If you encounter ASCII Braille with a screen reader, it tries to read it because it's not, you know, it doesn't see the font. And so it just reads that ASCII Braille to you. If you encounter Unicode Braille, it just reads the dot numbers to you, which is also not super useful. So you've got this problem of screen reader users aren't able to access Braille just using a screen reader. If they have a Braille display, they're set. You know, they can use that Braille display with their screen reader and access the Braille. Great. So BrailleBrain is definitely set up for that use case. But that's a really high bar to ask someone. In order to take this course, this free course, you have to buy a Braille display or otherwise acquire a Braille display. And so one of the things we've done is we've made all the course materials can also be accessed, all the examples, all the Braille can be accessed as an embossable copy. And so this embossable copy, you can just download it, you could take it to your library, you could take it wherever you have access to an embosser and emboss that BRF file. So there's at least another route that you can use to access that Braille and not have to rely on, you know, not everybody's going to be able to have a Braille display. So we didn't want to just leave it to folks that were able to afford or have access to a Braille display.
And if people want to find out more about BrailleBrain or undertake the course, where can they go?
So the website for BrailleBrain is braillebrain.aphtech.org. And that'll take you directly to the course. You can also go to the APH website at aph.org and search for BrailleBrain there, which will take you to a landing page that then you can click the link to go to the BrailleBrain page.
You can also check out APH News at aph.org /category/APH-news, or you can just search for APH News and you can subscribe to that as well. And you'll get updates from APH about changes to all of products, not just BrailleBrain. The other thing I would want to talk about too is just Braille literacy generally. So, you know, at APH, we've got the U tutorial, we've got the Nemeth tutorial, we've had those out for years. Those have been very, very popular and get thousands of users a month. Like, they are very popular. And now we've got BrailleBrain, and there's other courses out there. I think any way that someone can get access to Braille is good. However you're doing it, if you're using a single line Braille display, if, you know, in the future you're lucky enough to get a multi-line Braille display like the Monarch or another display, whatever it is that you need to have access to Braille and to read Braille every day, I think it's important. We know for a fact that people that learn Braille later in life are actually less likely to embrace Braille in the same way as folks that learn Braille when they're younger. And, you know, that's unfortunate. I don't want anyone to lose their ability to be literate. I don't want anyone to have to rely on audio. Like, if you can read Braille and you prefer audio, that's a preference. You know, there are people that can read print but prefer audiobooks. But if you're relying on audio because you can't read Braille, that's when there's a real tragedy. And that's when the system has failed. And it's like an option hasn't been presented to you. So just whatever we can do to get folks learning Braille. And, you know, if it turns out that they have mobility issues or sensory issues that make Braille not, you know, Braille's not going to be the solution for them, you know, that's the way it is. But you can't just say, you can't decide for someone else that Braille's not going to be the right method for them. You have to at least let them be aware that this is an option and let them decide if Braille's something they want to pursue. You can't just write them off. So I'm very pro Braille literacy. Literacy means a lot to me in all of its forms. And I just think we should do whatever we can to make it available to folks.
Well, that is excellent. Thank you very much for that. Sarah Welsh and Willow Freeman, Tactile Technology Product Specialist and Managers, respectively, for joining us here to talk Braille Brain here on RNIB Connect Radio.
I'm sure you are aware that RNIB has been working with the payment industry in the UK for many years to make sure that personal finance is accessible for blind and partially sighted people. Tactile markings on UK banknotes, talking cash machines, bank statements and bills in alternative formats such as Braille and audio and large print, banking apps that work with screen readers. Well, the list goes on. There's lots and lots of ways in which our personal finance is accessible. But personal finance is certainly evolving, and many of us now pay for products and services using smartphones and smartwatches. Some of those cash machines have stopped talking, and the chip and pin machines that we are sometimes confronted with at the point of sale, well, some of those have lost their tactile buttons. Added to that, our bank cards now often feel very smooth and are difficult to identify. Well, joining us now to help navigate this brave new world of accessible and sometimes inaccessible payments is Sabine Croxford, who is RNIB's Senior User Experience Consultant. Welcome back to RNIB Connect Radio, Sabine. Do you think that personal finance is currently more or less accessible than it was, say, 20 years ago?
Oh, hello, Dave. Thank you very much for having me here today. I feel that personal finance has evolved a lot in the last 20 years. So obviously in the past, most payments were made with cash or by check. And then in 2004, there was the introduction of chip and pin, and that was a big change. And people were very concerned about having to remember four digits, and it was a really quite a big step. However, over the years, most people got used to this with a physical pin pad where you could feel the buttons. But again, now this has changed to contactless and touchscreen chip and pin and paying with your smartphone through Apple Pay and Google Pay. So the old-fashioned methods are still there. But in addition now, there are also more techie solutions. And this can be very challenging for some people. But on the other hand, it also opens up a world for other people. So people who are familiar with smartphones and are happy to pay with Apple or Google Pay, for example, they can see their transaction straight away and know what they've paid and the amount before leaving the shop. And that's something that previously wasn't possible. But the introduction of touchscreen chip and pin devices is also challenging or inaccessible to many people, especially because not all the devices have been made accessible as of yet.
Indeed. So ideally, we would have a tactile keypad on which we can type in our PIN code, and that will authorize a transaction. Obviously, many payments, you don't need to insert your card and you don't need to enter a PIN. You can just tap now, a contactless payment. But what should blind and partially sighted people do if we are confronted with a chip and pin machine that's asking us to enter some information, but it doesn't have a tactile keypad?
There's two groups of people. So for people with some residual vision, the contrast, if well designed, can be better. And then many people find it okay to use, or sometimes even easier to use. But that obviously doesn't help people who don't have enough sight to see the information on the screen. And in that case, they should ask the merchant or the retailer to turn on the accessibility mode. And this is indicated by an eye icon, which is an image of an eye with diagonal lines through it, a little bit like the partially sighted society uses. Or sometimes the word accessibility mode is used as well. And the merchant can activate this. And once this is activated, the device will speak the amount and will give you instructions on how to enter your PIN, because that's different than when you have a PIN pad with the physical buttons. So it does require some practice, and not everybody will find this easy initially. And some machines don't have an accessibility mode yet in at the moment. And that case, we would like to know about it so that we can ensure that we work with the right companies on improving this. So you can contact RNIB on campaign@rnib.org.uk. And you can also find some more information on chip and pin, touchscreen chip and pin the devices on our website. So if you search for chip and pin on the RNIB website, you will find a page on what are accessible chip and pin devices, and that will give you some information as well.
And why do some retailers and small businesses like these all-screen chip and pin machines? I mean, what was wrong with the machines with buttons?
I don't think necessarily anything was wrong with it. That's just what we had at the time. But it does seem like the world is moving towards more touchscreens, and you can see that with your own mobile phones. And although sometimes these developments might seem a step back, it can also be a step forward. So if you think about your own smartphone and the access to information that has opened up because of that, that a whole world has opened up to many people using smartphones. While initially people said that smartphones or touchscreen phones can't be used by people who are blind. But with regards to chip and pin devices, on touchscreen devices, there are a lot more options for the merchants, which obviously appeals to them. So that can be the first reason why merchants want to change to the touchscreen. So things like splitting the bill or adding a 10% tip, for example, that can all be added to the touchscreen devices, which was less possible on the old-fashioned machines. And also the option to donate to charity, for example. And then some sort of practical things, like they're easier to clean, the screen is larger, so you can display visual information clearer as well. So there's different reasons, but at the moment I think most of the reasons are merchant-led rather than customer-led.
And you mentioned that some of these devices have an accessibility mode indicated by an I button on the screen. And of course, in some cases, there are also tactile templates available that will fit over the screen of the machine, so then you can feel where to locate your fingers. How do we, as blind and partially sighted people, do you think, educate retailers and other businesses about some of those adaptations?
I think in the background, we are working with UK Finance, and other areas of RNIB are also looking at educating retailers about this. On the UK Finance website, there are a couple of videos for retailers or merchants to show how an accessible chip and pin device works, as well as the information on our website. But that's more for users, really, rather than the retailers. And we also stress to manufacturers to provide instructions to the retailer, and ideally provide a video as well that shows how the accessibility mode works. So when the retailers get their new device, it will have instructions on the fact that there is an accessibility mode and on how to use that as well.
I'd like to turn our attention to cash machines, and we were all delighted when more of our cash machines started to talk, obviously with the use of headphones. We plug in the headphones and then you can discreetly then operate the machine to find out your balance and access other services. What should I do if my cash machine stops talking to me?
In the first instance, you should always contact the bank that the cash machine belongs to, because it might be that there's a maintenance issue that needs sorting, for example. So if it used to speak and suddenly it doesn't, then they need to be aware of it, because it's probably not something that they check on a weekly basis. So if you do notice that it doesn't speak anymore and it used to speak, then that might be an issue that they can sort out. But if the cash machine has not got a headphone socket and therefore has no speech, then again, contacting the bank will be the first step to say, why haven't you got an accessible ATM? Why haven't you got an ATM that speaks? And if you got no luck with this, then contact RNIB, who might be able to help you, or contact the bank on your behalf.
And I've heard anecdotally, you know, a couple of people saying that their cash machines have stopped talking. Do you have any sense of how widespread that problem is?
I don't have any numbers about the number of sort of ATMs that used to speak and don't speak anymore. I think there's two issues. One is obviously that banks are closing and cash machines are disappearing. So obviously if you are used to using a particular cash point and the bank's closed and the cash point is not available anymore, then that's obviously an issue. That's separate from obviously whether the ATM speaks or not. And the other is that some cash machines do not speak, so they haven't got a headphone socket and they don't speak. And that could be because they're more of the portable ATMs that you can probably fit inside a shop, for example, rather than the ones that are linked to a bank. So we did randomly test quite a few ATMs last year, and there were lots of ATMs that still have speech. So I think that that's a good sign, and that's a lot of the major banks. We tested this in the city center, so that was a good thing. But there were also some that did not speak or that did not have a headphone socket and therefore never had spoken. So again, this needs to be reported to the bank in the first instance, and then see if this is a temporary sort of fault or whether there's something that needs to be done longer term.
Okay, and obviously, look, we appreciate you're part of the solution, not the problem, but there is a third area that I wanted to just kind of touch on, and that is this topic of flat bank cards then. So can you tell us about these new bank cards and some of the ways that we've tried to make those more accessible?
So yes, we are working with some banks about the design of flat cards, and we're trying to raise some awareness as well on the fact that moving to a flat card does mean that they are not accessible to everybody. So we are encouraging banks to consider as a starting point a clear visual design for their card, because this will benefit many people. And we've also drawn up some guidelines that banks can use, which sort of details things like contrast, font type, font size, color, etc. There are limitations to the design of bank cards, as there's obviously limited space, but if the cards are well designed visually and having the information in a similar size as on the embossed cards, then many people will benefit from this. But in addition, there obviously needs to be some tactile information as well. So with the removal of the embossed information, having a completely flat card means that people don't know it's a bank card. They can confuse it with a store card or any other library card that they might have in their wallet as well. So as a minimum, what we say is that people need to know that their flat card is a bank card. And in addition, it should also be clear on how to insert it into an ATM or a chip PIN device. And people need to know whether the card is a debit or a credit card. So those are sort of some minimum requirements that people could generally pick up from the old embossed cards. So what banks are doing more and more, and hopefully everybody will adopt this at some point, is to have a cutout notch on the cards to indicate that it's a bank card, and it will also help orientate the card so you know the right way to insert it into a chip and pin device or an ATM, for example. And then there are different shaped notches. For example, MasterCard have developed three different notches, sort of a circular one, a more square one, and a triangular one, so you can differentiate between the different cards, but that's not been rolled out very widely yet. And in addition, some banks have also added some tactile markings, and this can also help know whether something is a debit or a credit card, for example, and possibly which bank the card is from. Some banks might add some braille letters, for example, to indicate the bank that is coming from. And even if you don't read braille, if you know there's some dots in the top right of the card, for example, you might know this is bank A, and if they're in the top left of the card, then it might be bank B.
Okay, so this is going to vary from bank to bank then. There isn't like a standard across the industry.
We are trying to get some standard across. So obviously that if you have a debit card from bank A, it has a circular notch. And if you have a debit card from bank B, it also has a circular notch, because you don't want to confuse different cards with the same tactile marking. So a circular notch should really be associated with a debit card, and then something else for a credit card, for example. But you don't want a circular notch for a credit card from one bank and the same for a debit card from another bank.
And what has brought about this change? I mean, for years we had, you know, plastic cards, and actually some blind people were able to identify by touch, you know, the shapes of the embossed numbers on those cards. Why are banks moving to flat bank cards?
The embossing on cards that was required many, many years ago was there to make a carbon copy for the merchant and the customer. And obviously that's no longer required. So this has allowed, and it's taken a long time because we haven't used that for years, but it has allowed now the card providers the opportunity to change the card design. And this does create challenges for people who are unable to see the visual information, and that is obviously something that the banks must address as part of their planning. But it also allows flexibility with the visual design of the bank card, and if well designed, then this can benefit not only visually impaired customers but all customers, as the information can be made clearer with improved contrast and clearer numbers and information, basically. So it's just a change forward, basically. The carbon copy is not required anymore, so therefore the embossed numbers are not required either.
Now, you work at RNIB, Sabine, and I'm sure you know some blind and partially sighted people personally. What methods are you noticing that people are using to make payments with?
Oh, that's a combination of everything, really. I mean, everybody's individual and everybody's got their own preference. Some people really like cash. Sometimes that's also from a budgeting point of view. So you take out a certain amount per week and that's the amount that you can spend. Others prefer cash because that's what they're used to, really. Then a lot of people who are a bit more techie, they like the Apple or Google Pay because they always have their phone with them. There's no need for PIN entry. You can easily keep track of your transactions on the spot, so people really like that. And then there's also people who just like to use their chip and PIN card as they have done for the last 20 years, really. And then obviously with the introduction of contactless, people have really liked that because then you don't have to enter your PIN, although now and again you still have to do that, which is a little bit of a disadvantage and also create issues with the inaccessible touchscreen chip and PIN devices.
Yeah, I mean, I do like using my watch to make a payment because I appreciate being able to read the receipt, something that I wasn't able to do previously. So I can get the screen reader to tell me that the transaction was what I thought it was, you know, so I do find that very reassuring. Well, look, Sabine, thank you so much for all of this. Lots of super useful information for our listeners. And thank you for taking the time to share. Tell us, what's the best way if people are having problems and they have reported it to their bank and they're not having a lot of joy or they just want to get the latest information? What's the best way to keep across some of these personal finance issues in a kind of an RNIB context?
It's to call the RNIB helpline, really. The helpline be able to direct you to the right team to deal with any specific questions, whether that be practical things or whether that be other things to do with maybe the legal teams or any sort of practical help that could help an individual. The helpline is 0303 123 9999. So that's 0303 123 9999. So contact the helpline and they'll be able to put you in touch with the right team.
Sabine Croxford, Senior User Experience Consultant with RNIB. Thanks for joining us on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you very much, Dave.
As we've discussed previously on Tech Talk, there are a lot of challenges when it comes to making card payments. Bank cards are becoming less tactile and less accessible. So how do you keep track of all your cards? How do you remember all your PINs? How do you handle it if you're confronted with one of those touchscreen card machines that seem to be becoming quite common nowadays? And of course, good old cash is becoming less of an option. Those days were straightforward, weren't they? So an option that could help you get around at least some of these problems is paying with your smartphone or your smartwatch. So in my case, I'm an Apple iOS user, so I use Apple Pay on my phone and my watch all the time. If you're on Android, the equivalent on there is Google Pay. And there's several benefits, several reasons why you might want to do this. First off, you don't need to have your physical cards with you. You can leave them at home. All you need is your phone. To verify yourself, you don't have to remember all your PINs because all you do is use your Touch ID or your Face ID to verify yourself. So in my case, my phone doesn't have the home button. So I use Face ID to verify that it's me. And then from there, I can just tap my phone near the payment terminal if I'm in store, and then the payment will go through. Once the payment is made and goes through, the transaction will immediately appear in the wallet app, so you can see how much it was, and you can make sure that it was the right amount. And that works really nice. It's all very accessible. And from a security point of view, The retailer, when you pay, this doesn't affect your actual usage, but just a bit of kind of behind the scenes, if you like. The retailer, when you use Apple Pay or Google Pay, doesn't get your real card details. So the payment still goes through as normal, but they don't see your actual card details. What they see are virtual card details that are specifically tied to you and can only be used with your device. So if you're concerned about handing over your details anywhere, obviously you should always exercise caution when making any kind of card payment. But if you are a little bit concerned, or for whatever reason you don't want to give your real details, Apple Pay will give you essentially masked details that the retailer will see. As a general rule, this might vary in other parts of the world, but as a general rule here in the UK, anywhere that accepts contactless payments, any store that accepts contactless, should accept Apple and Google Pay. So anywhere that contactless card payments are available, Apple and Google Pay should work. And it's also accepted on many websites and apps as well. So if you see an Apple Pay or Google Pay icon in an app, then you can use it there. You don't have to worry about filling in all your card number and expiry date and all those other details that go with it. You can just click on Apple Pay, do your verification of choice, Face ID or Touch ID, and then that will make the payment. And again, the retailer doesn't see your proper card details. So I'm going to talk you through how to set this up, because once it's up and running, it's very nice and very simple and works really, really well. So I've got my iPhone here and I'm going to go into the Wallet app.
Wallet heading.
Now, there's a few options in here, but the one that I'm going to go to for now is Add Card, because we're going to add a new card to this. I've already got some cards in here, but we'll go in and add a new one.
Orders button. Add card button.
So there's Add Card.
Add Close button. Add to Wallet. Keep all the cards, keys and passes you use every day all in one place. Available cards heading. Previous cards, none.
So if I'd used a card previously with Apple Pay, that would show up here. Or if there was a card available in my iTunes account, because this is separate to the card that you use. Well, it can be the same card that you use in iTunes or the App Store to make purchases, but it's a separate system. So if, for example, I had a particular card on my Apple account that was compatible with Apple Pay, then it would show up here. I do have one that is compatible, but it's already added, so that's not showing up there.
Debit or credit card button.
So I carry on going to the right, and there's the option for debit and credit card. There's a few other options in here, but we'll just focus on adding debit or credit cards, so click on that.
Photo of person using Face ID with Apple Pay image. As Apple Pay heading. Add credit. Debit or store cards to Apple Pay to make secure payments in apps, on the web and in shops using NFC. Card related information. Personal data. Continue button.
There's the personal data stuff. We'll just click continue on that.
Karma review. Back button. Karma review. Add card heading. Position your debit or credit card in the frame to scan it.
So this brings up an interface where you can scan the card. So you can actually put your credit or debit card underneath the camera and it will pick up on the card details. And that works really nicely, actually. That does work really well. So if you're not sure what your card details are, then give that a go. You may still need to verify some of the details, but that could be an option. If you're not sure what your card details are, then try scanning it, and that may work. But we're going to do it the longer way. So let's go to add manually.
Enter card details manually button.
Doubles that.
Card detail, card number, text field is editing required. Insertion point at start.
So it's put my focus on the card number text field. There is actually something above this that says card name or card holder's name, but it's automatically filled that out with Callum Stoneman. So I'm going to put my card number in. Obviously, you're not going to hear this. We're going to edit the details out, but I will, not that you'd get much out of my bank, to be honest, but even still, we're going to, I'll put my card number in and then we'll see what else appears on this screen. So my card details are in, and then I'm just going to click next. The only thing additional that's appeared is a clear text button. So if I'd entered them wrong, I could clear out that field. So I'm going to go back to the top of the screen and click next, which is on the top right.
Next button. Next. Verify your card information. Security code, 3-digit CVV.
Okay, so this now is asking for the rest of the details that you need to pay. So expiry date and 3 digits. So I'll put those in and then click next.
Back next button. Contacting the card issuer. Adding card heading. in progress, terms and conditions, heading.
There's terms and conditions, so we'll agree to those.
Agree, button. Setting up card for Apple Pay. Adding card, head. Choose how to verify your card for Apple Pay.
And now it's saying choose how to verify. So this is just making sure that it's definitely me adding it to Apple Pay. And there's a couple of options here. These might vary depending on if you've got online banking apps already installed on your device. So let's have a look at what I've got.
Choose how to verify your card for Apple Pay. Selected. Text message. 7 stars. Call National West. Next button.
So for me, it's a NatWest card. So I've got the option of either receiving a text with a verification code, or I could call NatWest and verify it with them over the phone. So we're going to do text message. So I'll click next.
Loading. Card verify text field is editing. Enter code, character mode, insertion point at start.
So that then sent me a verification code via text, which I've entered. So I'll now click done.
Done button. Wallet heading.
And then that's added. So if I scroll down now in my wallet app.
Orders button. Add card. NatWest. Card number ends with.
That's the one that I've just added there. And that's now available. So now when I double tap my side button from anywhere on my iPhone, that could be my lock screen, it could be my home screen, it could be basically anywhere. Once I double tap that and do Face ID, it should then give me the option to pay with my Apple Pay cards. And that card, that NatWest card that I've just added, should be one of them. The final thing that I just want to show you with Apple Pay is how easy it is to view your transactions in this wallet app. So because I've only just added this NatWest card, there's not going to be any transactions in there. But if I keep going to the right, I've got another card. I've got a couple of other cards in here that I can show you with.
Air Plus. Card number ends with...
Air Plus. Now, this is my... you get the last 4 digits of the card there, by the way, where it says card ending in. But this is my work card, my corporate card for work. And I've been travelling for work lately, so there are some transactions in here. Again, I've got this in my Apple Pay just to make it easier, because I don't then have to worry about making sure that I'm paying with the right card. I can just, by default, when I double tap my side button, it's my personal debit card that's selected. But if I need to, if I'm using the work card, I can just click on, there's an option that says show other cards, and then I can double tap on that, and then I'll get the option of my Air Plus one. So if we double tap this where it says Air Plus card number ending in, and then the last digits, if we double tap this.
Air Plus, done button. More button. Air Plus. Card number ends with...
We've got that again. Now I'm just going to keep flicking to the right.
Latest transactions. Heading. Just Eat. Apple Pay. 30/11/2023. £22.34. Button.
So that was one of my meals. And the Just Eat app supports Apple Pay. So you can just click on Apple Pay and Just Eat. And do your Face ID. Select which card you want. And then that makes the payment. And that shows up in there.
Uber. Apple Pay. 30/11/2023. £28.23. Button.
Same with Uber.
Licensed taxi. London. England. 30/11/2023. £30. Button.
That was another taxi where they had a physical card machine. So I paid, still using Apple Pay, but I paid using that way, using the contactless, just tapping my phone to it. So that's how you can view transactions. These are just transactions that have been made using Apple Pay, by the way. So if I was to use the physical card itself somewhere, or if I was to pay online by entering my card details manually, then they wouldn't show up in this transactions section. Although, new in iOS 17, it is possible to connect certain bank accounts and certain cards with Apple Pay, and then you can view your, well, with Apple Wallet, I should say, and then you can view your full transaction history regardless of where you made the transaction. But that's not something I've tried yet, so I can't comment too much on it. But if that is available, then you will, if you're on iOS 17 and that's available for your particular card, then you will get a prompt to enable that, and you can connect the two accounts if you want to. So we've looked at how you get started with Apple Pay, but what if you're an Android user? Well, as I said before, the equivalent on there is Google Pay. And the setup process for this is fairly similar to the Apple Pay setup. The main difference being that if there isn't a wallet app anywhere on your phone, then you'll need to download the Google Wallet app from the Play Store. So you want to go into the Play Store and search for Google Wallet. Obviously, because we're talking about payment information, you want to be very careful and just make sure that you're downloading the correct one. You would hope that all the apps in the Play Store are safe, but you never know. Some of them do slip through. It can happen. So go into the Play Store and search for Google Wallet, and the developer of the app is Google LLC. So that's how you can verify that you've got the right one. Google Wallet by Google LLC, and it's a free app. So just install that. It will appear on your home screen as Wallet. And then from there, it's pretty similar, really. So I've got a Samsung Galaxy phone here, but the setup process should be fairly similar across all Android devices, seeing as we're talking about a Google app. So I'm going to go into Wallet.
Wallet. Google Wallet. Wallet. Out of pager. Account and settings. Add to wallet button.
And we want that one there. Add to wallet. Now, in my case, I've not got any other cards in here, so I'm just going to go to add to wallet.
Google Wallet. Close screen button. Send feedback to Google button. Add to wallet. Payment card. Pay everywhere that Google Pay is accepted. 1 of 5. In list. 5 items.
So you heard there's 5 items there, because there's all sorts of, similar to the Apple Wallet, there's other types of passes and tickets and loyalty cards that you can add in here, but we'll just add a payment card. So double tap on this.
Google Wallet. Back button. Out of list. Send feedback to Google. Add a payment card. Encrypt cards on this phone in wallet for faster, safer payments. New credit or debit card. Add to wallet and your Google account. 1 of 3. In list. 3 items.
And then, again, this is similar to the Apple Pay setup. So there's 3 items here. The first one is a new card, and then the other 2 cards that I've already used, or payment methods that I've already used for Google Play previously. So again, similar to Apple, how it picks up on cards that are in your Apple account. If you've got a card already added to Google Play to make purchases from the Play Store, that will show up here as well. But again, we're just going to go to new card.
Add credit or debit card. Align your card to this frame and tap to focus.
So you can add your card by aligning it in the frame. If you're not sure what your card details are, again, you can scan it, or we can carry on going to the right and enter the details manually.
Add with a tap button, or enter details manually button.
That's what we want, so double tap.
Google Payments. Editing. Card number. Edit box.
So one difference here is where the Apple Pay setup made you enter the card number first, then you click next, then you did your expiry and security code, and then click next. This is all in one screen. So this has got, on this screen, it's got the card number, the expiry date, edit fields, the security code, and then it's also asking me to verify my billing address as well, which Apple Pay didn't do. So Apple would just use your default Apple ID billing address, and you can change it per card in the settings if you need to. But Google Pay, it's got it all on one screen. So I will enter those details, and then we'll come back and I will click next and see what happens next.
Issuer terms, heading.
And then we've got terms and conditions here.
Web view. Thank you for using your NatWest credit card in the Google Pay application. Your NatWest credit card agreement accept button.
We can just accept that.
Accept. Google Play services. Processing card details, heading. Choose how you'll verify. Ticked, ticked. Radio button. Text me a code. 7*3900 and more options, button. MasterCard 4 bullet code. Choose how you'll verify. Your bank wants. Ticked. Text me a. Ticked. Radio button. Not ticked. Call. Not ticked. Contact info. Continue. Button.
So then this is the same thing we got with the Apple Pay with the verification code. So again, I will go for the text message. So click continue.
Continue. Enter verification code. Editing. Code. Edit box.
So I'll put the code in and I'll now click continue. There's other options here as well. If you'd selected the wrong verification method, you can change it.
Change verification. Continue. Continue. Button. Editing. 526,000.
And I think that's processing.
Google Pay. MasterCard 4 bullet 026.
There we go. And it looks like that's the card now added. So if I now move around in this this screen.
Card is ready to pay contactless.
There we go. Card is ready to pay. In terms of usage, Google Pay, if anything, is a little bit simpler than Apple Pay, because you don't have to be on a particular screen. So with Apple Pay, you have to double tap that side button, do your verification method, and then you're ready to pay. What happens with Google Pay is that you choose a default card, and all you have to do is unlock your device. So do your verification method of choice to unlock the phone. And then once the phone's unlocked, you just tap it to a card reader and that will make the payment. So it's definitely worth doing mobile payments. And hopefully this gives you enough info to get started with your device.
And that's it. That's all we've got time for on Tech Talk this week. We hope you have a wonderful Christmas. And if you have a quiet moment, maybe you'll tune in for our Best Of show. Next time, we'll be having a bit of a look back at some of the highlights of 2023. So next time, you will hear our highlights show of 2023, the best of some of our favourite moments from Tech Talk throughout the year. You'll hear us on Thursday, December the 28th at 9 p.m. with the usual repeat on Saturday. That'll be Saturday the 30th at 5 p.m. And the podcast will, of course, be available as usual on the Friday. That'll be the 29th. So hopefully you've got that. So no Tech Talk on Tuesday, but there will be a Tech Talk next week. So podcast or Thursday at 9 p.m. or Saturday at 5 p.m. Have you got that, Callum?
It's that interesting time, isn't it, where all the TV and radio schedules are a bit all over the place.
Indeed. And how do you check yours?
Well, of course, for me, it's the apps for the radio. I don't really look at radio schedules much. I mean, I usually listen to BBC stations, so there's the BBC Sounds app. Of course, RNIB Connect Radio, they've got the schedule on the website, I believe. And then for TV, I've got Virgin Media, so the Virgin TV app is good enough for me.
And of course, you can hear our very own Howell Davies with the TV guide. You get that in all the good places where you get your podcast, and usually forms part of the Daily Connect show right here on RNIB Connect Radio. Let us know, actually. That might be a piece we can do. What's your favourite TV? I mean, I guess there's still quite a few people watching linear TV. Anyway, look, we are out of time. Got to go. Have a wonderful, wonderful Christmas. Stay safe, everybody. Whatever you're celebrating, do it in style. Do it well. Look after yourselves. And we will catch you very soon. From myself, Dave Williams, and the rest of the Tech Talk team, bye for now.
Bye-bye. Have a great Christmas.
Bye.